Welcome to the underground.
Turn me up, bitch!
My Little Underground with Peter A.
It's My Little Underground. I'm Peter A. Make sure you're subscribed anywhere you get podcasts and be sure to follow me on socials at MLUPod. You can also support My Little Underground for as little as $1 a month. Link in the description and over at PeterARadio.com. Today on the show, we have Editrix talking up their brand new album, Tell Me I'm Bad. We also talked about shattering indie rock, politics blending with music, Wendy Eisenberg's flight with a Christian convertist, and so much more with Editrix right here on My Little Underground. Editrix, welcome to My Little Underground. So glad to have you all.
Thanks.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you.
Happy Friday. Happy February.
It's almost over.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of glad because one, you know, we get closer to spring and warm weather. Two, I stopped seeing a bunch of like, you know, fake advertising. Like a lot of these corporations, they have these commercials for Black History Month and it's just kind of pathetic because what are you really doing for Black people? You know, but that's like four other podcasts we can do. Your new album, Tell Me I'm Bad, it's rocking, it's weird in a good way. And the whole thing, at least, you know, you guys are trying to destroy indie rock, right? Annihilate it.
Sure.
Plant.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. All right. So like, you know, tell me your thoughts on like the whole of the catch-all term and subgenres and all that.
I just feel like it's like at this point, like the most, I mean, there aren't a lot of like really concrete like progressions in rock music at this point, but I feel like indie rock is like the barest kind of just like, there's like a very specific formula and a very specific sound and it's like very easily marketable and it makes me really bummed. I think like any kind of like rock music that deviates from that kind of template, I think is like a healthy and great thing and something to push forward through.
Yeah, I'm also like super wary of any genre name that comes from like, or I guess it's sort of like apes a divestment from a major label situation. Like if you're calling something indie rock, you're like sort of calling it independent rock, even though you're probably not thinking that when you're saying it. And when you're saying that, you're probably obliquely still like referring to an indie label. And so that, like calling it that, like it kind of decentralizes how these like particular structures like tell us what we hear, and those structures like make it so that what Steve and I hear is like kind of a formulaic situation is like it's no one's fault, like it's stuff that we notice that's endemic to the music, but it's also like what is accessible to us as people who like self-select as like somewhat alternative as like the thing that we're supposed to listen to. So like as a catch-all term, it's like linked at once to like being alternative from like a mainstream, but also like creating its own mainstream that like replicates a lot of the same like social and musical signifiers. And that really alienates me because like I also like challenging weird stuff because I think it's really human music to be different than that. Like I'd rather be like really honest to the things that I care about when I'm making music with my friends than to try, however like consciously, to sound like things that like already exist or are playing in like the alternative person coffee shop or are playing in like the alternative person bookstore. Like I want my music to be as alternative as like, or not alternative, like as a reaction against something that already exists, but like as authentic to my, to like the things that I think are interesting as possible. And I feel like anything formulaic that's so linked with like structures of capital makes it really hard to like innovate within it without capitulating to those same forces, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, because no band, at least from what I've seen, maybe y'all can tell me something different, I haven't seen anybody identify themselves as indie rock. So that kind of speaks to the structure that you're talking about. It's almost like the more we use terms like that, it's like it's creating a demographic and you're creating a demographic to sell to. That's all it really is at the end of the day. But let me ask you this: when you're listening to music or when you're making music, right? Especially music that's like very genre ambiguous, it's kind of doing a lot of different things. Is there any point where you feel like, okay, this is kind of too scattered with a lot of different influences, or do you think having tons of influences or sonic influences that clash. Do you think that is still, that still makes a cohesive project, if that makes any sense? Like, do you think something can be too scattered creatively or not?
I think it can be. I mean, like, there are some bands like a Naked City or something that can like pull off that like really specific genre thing. But I mean, those are some of the best people you'll find anywhere. And like, I think most people who like try that kind of thing can't make it as a cohesive a project at all. And like, I love bands that can take disparate influences and make it into like one like vision that they have. But like, I think that is kind of a difficult prospect and doesn't happen like super often.
Yeah. I like when it does happen because it means that people are thinking about music outside of just like ways that they've learned it or ways that they have seen it be valued by other people and other circumstances. Cause like with Naked City, it's so cool because they're taking the genre thing really seriously and treating it like a radio. And like, you're kind of dialing through these situations where like you're playing surf and you're playing whatever and whatever other genre like John Zorn wants you to play, and then you're good at that. So you can identify and boil down these things to something kind of essential, which is like sort of the project. And like, forgive me for being such an egghead about this, but like, it's sort of the project of like 80s postmodernism anyway, because it's just about juxtaposing like all these different things and seeing what the juxtaposition does. But what Steve's talking about liking that's different than that is like music that's, it's not like a fusion, but it's like blending disparate influences to make a personal statement, which is I think what like all great art does, because nothing's like, well, barely anything is created in a vacuum. So like everybody's got disparate influences. Like I'm as influenced by like Naked City as I am by like Butthole Surfers, as I am by like Leo Brower. And like everybody's got a story that's that personal when they play music. And the people who do it most successfully, whatever that means, are the people who like believe enough in all of them to let those voices shine through them, I think. So it's like always pretty effective if someone's being honest with what they actually like.
Well, when you listen to, when I listen to Tell Me I'm Bad, there's all of that. You know, there's a lot of different things happening at the same time. It's almost, it is a challenging listen, I think, because, you know, at first now, because when I'm listening to music, at least the type of music I grew up listening to or music that I've come to, you know, to get, you know, be attached to, like, you know, songs that are very catchy. Like those are the things that I look for first. And then when I'm listening to this, I'm like, okay, where's the catchy tune, right? Because I heard Chelsea and I'm going through the rest of the album. I hear wild, weird stuff. And then I hear the catchy stuff. So when you were making this album, did you think, okay, we have to have this, you know, for lack of a better term, accessible, or, and then you have at the same time, the wild and crazy experimental tunes?
I think we just like both of those things. So they both came out. Like, I don't think it was like a, like we need a single and then we can do our fun shit. Like, I think it just kind of came out that way. It's like, we, as much as we like weird fucked up stuff, like we all like pop music too, you know? And yeah. Like neither is like more valid than the other.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately it's all music. Like there's this amazing interview with Robin Kelly, who wrote the book on Thelonious Monk, amongst like a bunch of other incredible books. And in this interview, he was talking about his relationship with Monk's music. And he's like, Monk always conceived of himself as like a pop songwriter. He's like, this is gonna be the song that's like, everyone's gonna listen to on the radio because it's like that catchy. And like, you listen to Thelonious Monk, or like, at least I do, I think a lot of people do. And it's like really singable, like catchy music, but you wouldn't think of it as like pop the way that we understand pop. And I feel like when we're, like Steve's just totally right. Like we like this stuff. I don't really see them as that different. But I also think that like a lot of the indie rock that we're talking about, this formulaic stuff, they also like waver in and out of having great hooks and not. But like what's different is they're doing like way less pyrotechnic stuff or like specific stuff. And I'm talking they as in like the formula, like not any specific person, but like the musical parameters are much more firmly delineated so that the things that are catchy stand out a lot easier because you kind of know what to expect if it's not catchy. But what we're doing is like, we just like catchy stuff and we also like weird stuff, and I don't think we differentiate. And so because we feel that way, like it creates its own form that can kind of only be judged on its own merit, I hope, you know?
Yeah. Can you tell me, like, what is your most accessible influence and your most experimental influence?
I mean,
I don't know if I think that way, but Steve, I mean, shoot. Like, what do you think, Steve?
I mean, I think both of us are like huge Prince people, and that's like huge, you know, super accessible and super, I mean, like, he's great because he makes super accessible music, but comes from it from like this like complete alien way, you know, and like I love that. And then like, and like lots of, you know, like old soul and just like great hooks and great catchy shit. And then like, you know, Wendy's deep in free jazz world, and I like some of that stuff too. And like, we've both spent time around noise world, and I mostly come from like punk and metal and stuff like that. That's like,
you got the beard for it. You got the beard for punk and metal.
Thank you. But yeah, I don't know. I mean,
yeah, I feel that way too. Like, I feel like it's funny. I've been really into the Flesh Sessions. That's like some 86 Prince stuff recently. And it's like super hard funk that feels like 80s Miles or like early 70s Miles. And it's like, that's the same dude who wrote Kiss. Like, he's also both, obviously. And yeah, like, you know, I listen to that and I feel how catchy it is. But then I listen to like some like weird Jason Willett, like 90s, 2000s Baltimore stuff. And I'm like, just at home. And like, I think that's probably as disparate for me as it gets. Cause like, when I listen to, yeah, when I listen to like Jason Willett's record with Ruins, which like I just learned about, it's not like catchy, but like there's things that just ingrain themselves for me that feel like hooks. And when I listen to Prince, it's like there's things that are obviously like the best hooks that anyone has ever written, but then behind it there's like these weird production or like idiosyncratic things that are just as weird as the stuff I hear in this like super like noise world stuff.
When I listen to like Prince 1999, like there's a lot of like glamorous songs, but they really are, because when you hear a song like Automatic, it's a 9-minute epic, but you know, there's some popness embedded in it, but it's really kind of whacked out and trippy. Like if you brought that record to a program director, they'd be like, "We gotta cut this. Like this is too, right, it's too much going on." Yeah, it's almost too weird. So yeah, that kind of like contrast between everyone's gonna like this and the weird music, crazy music fans are gonna dig this. So songs on your album that are very you know, that kind of touch, not touch home, but kind of have a political edge to it, like Torture. You know, you're talking about war crimes from the Iraq War. So when you watch the news now or everything that's going on, do you get song ideas from what's happening, or what's that like?
I mean, it's just like we're living in such a weird parasocial time. I mean, I'm just kind of nabbing at this answer because I'm the one who writes most of the lyrics, but like, it's not like I get song ideas by it, but I'm usually just like so grossed out by how like people we call our leaders treat everybody that I'm like, okay, so this is like obviously available. And also like, this is rock music, I think, I hope. So like,
it's rock music.
It's rock music. And I feel like rock music, like, it's easy to forget the more co-opted it feels like it's become. And like, we're at like the logical continuation of that, that it's like a really subversive thing to play rock music. Like, it's music like not created, well, whatever, like we can talk about like how studio systems can kind of like mess with that, but like mostly like to play rock music and to commit yourself to this whole situation enough to like make a record and eventually find ourselves talking to someone cool like you about it, like you're kind of choosing to opt out of like normal social relations to like the news or like stuff, because you're conceiving of your political world not just in the activism you might do, but also in the way you talk about it and the way you sing about it, which is different. So like when I hear stuff that like pisses me off on the news, I'm like angry, and then I probably won't like be like, oh, I'm so angry, I'm gonna like make my life like a musical theater thing where I instantly sing, because I would be lying. But like when I get to sing in this rock band, it's like this music is so forceful and so beautiful. It's like, what has made me feel that way? And usually it's just something I'm like annoyed at, that like an injustice that I see.
It's almost like you're not talking about something explicitly, but you know, that idea, that topic, that what's happened, that news story is in your head, and you create this kind of this universe and this whole world and this story surrounding it. But it's not like explicitly about that thing. You take an ambiguity approach, which I think is cool. I like ambiguity in lyrics, you know. I like being able to like not dissect, but like, what are they talking about? Are they talking about this? Are they talking about that? And I think that that's great. But do you think that like an artist or a band can get too quote unquote political or socially aware? Do you think that's a thing?
I think bad political lyrics are very, very cringy. But like, if that's like, I don't know, like if that's what someone sets out to do and like the band is like more of a vehicle for their political thoughts, like that's fine. I just think the music usually suffers for it. It doesn't have to, but it usually does. Like,
I agree. Like, I mean, like, feel free to cut me off on this or whatever, but like, even like musicians that like share the same type of like, I guess like they're on the left and they feel ambiguous about stuff. Like when they're really explicit about it, I feel alienated because I'm like, you're telling me how to think, which is also dogmatic, which I find really problems like really annoying. Yeah. But when like somebody's like couching a problem in like a human relation where they're like, and this is why I'm never like, war is bad, torture is bad, don't torture. Like, because if you're doing that, it's like, first of all, hopefully. And second of all, like, I guess another version of duh, like you're hearing that already, I hope. But yeah, like you're focusing too much on spreading something you care about. It's like what Steve said about dogma, but like language is not only used to like say things like this cat is orange or like this water is half empty or half full. Like language is also used to give you like sensory images. So when you're like giving a lyric about something political and you're direct with it, you're robbing the listener or the whoever's like hearing it of the chance to like come to their own conclusions with like this kind of sensory evidence they're getting from you. And I like the listener to feel like they have agency when they're listening, you know?
Yeah. You know what? I think there's, I think it's cool when, you know, like Steve was saying, like there's a lot of cringeworthy political lyrics, which I've heard, which comes off terrible, but there's sometimes it comes off like incredible. Like if you articulate it well, like Killer Mike, he literally has a song that he says, I'm glad Ronald Reagan is dead. You know what I mean? Like, do you feel alienated when you hear that? Or do you feel like, you know, a Reagan person? Because you know, you can think Reagan and the Black community and the crack epidemic. If you put two and two together, you'd be like, okay, I get you. Even if you probably voted for Reagan, you're probably like, okay, I think I understand where he's coming from with that.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
As much as there's like cringy direct political lyrics, like there's so many great 80s hardcore records that like the lyrics are just like an angry kid saying something political and I'm just like, fuck yeah. Like there's this band The Crucifix, if you're familiar, like they have the most just like outrageous lyrics that are like so on the nose, but like they're so good. Like it's just like the most like beating you over the head.
Yeah. And like good satire does that too. Like Eugene Chadbourne's music is like really great political satire a lot of the time, and like the Dead Kennedys and like bands like that. Like there are different degrees of like directness that you can have, and when you're like direct the way that you are both talking about, I mean, like Public Enemy comes to mind too. It's just so affecting if they actually mean it. But sometimes I feel like the natural subversion in rock music makes people feel like they have to have a political opinion that they don't have any stakes in. And like I think I come to lyrics like in full, like writing lyrics that are political with full awareness of my privilege as like someone who's like relatively, like I can pass, like I'm in the sense that like I'm non-binary, but like I can totally easily be read as a woman, and like I'm white and I like come from a certain level of privilege and I like know all those things. So if I were to say shit like that, I feel like I would feel it so directly that you would totally believe it, but I'm a little bit more comfortable making it ambiguous so that people who like haven't yet questioned these things that I'm trying to question all the time in my private life to like make other people's lives better, like might come at it a little bit less defensively.
I think my favorite, I think the best political record is There's a Riot Going On. And it's like all the lyrics in that record, it's like, they're like kind of ambiguous and they mostly focus on like people instead of being like, this is fucked up or that is fucked up. And it's not like the message is any less clear, but it's like done so just like beautifully and creatively. And like, I think that record is obviously like historically important, but like every time I listen to it, I feel like you really feel the intent in a way that like, I don't know, some just being like the president is bad, like doesn't come across, you know, like I was that one for that.
If you listen to like Kendrick Lamar, like To Pimp a Butterfly, there's things that he's saying that's very explicit. And then he's saying things that have a, you know, it's like he's showing you what he's talking about, but not, he's showing, not telling. You know, like it's not like institutionalized. You kind of understand what he's talking about. Really? You can put two and two together. Moses Sumney, Rank and File, like you just hearing the song and how the, you know, the melody and everything, you know what he's talking about, even though he's not actually saying it. But then there's like KRS-One, Sound of the Police. He is explicit. He's telling you exactly what's going on and what he thinks about the cops. And I don't find that alienating, obviously, because I relate to it. But it's one of those things where it's like, listen, you, I don't care what you feel. Like, this is what I feel. This is what I've experienced, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
I couldn't argue. I mean, it's just exactly it. I think it's just knowing context and like knowing what you believe in and who you're talking to and what's at stake.
Yeah. Did you guys see Judas and the Black Messiah yet?
Not yet.
Oh.
I'm so excited though.
It is unbelievable. Yeah, it is really, really good. And I talked to somebody like, this is like a horror movie, but it's because it's real life. You know, I felt worse watching that than after watching like Halloween. You know what I mean?
Because it's way more real.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, because it happened. Like, unbelievable. I'm really excited to see it. It sucks that I haven't yet.
Yeah, it looks great.
Yeah, it's a 2-hour flick, but it just flies by. Your eyes don't ever leave the screen. You're like, what? Because, you know, there's some flicks that have like a dull moment, but then this movie's all rise. It's all rise.
Wow.
So Wendy, tell me about your flight from hell where somebody tried to convert you.
Oh, yeah. I don't really even remember where I was going. This was back when it was like not weird to fly, I guess. But yeah, there's this guy and like, I'm a pretty chatty person as you might be getting. And like, I like to make friends with strangers because like at heart, I'm kind of optimistic like that. And I was like reading something and like trying, I forget even what it was. Like the details are so foggy, but I just remember this guy like sitting next to me and like talking about my book. And I thought he was like genuinely interested in whatever it was. And I was like, yeah, but this guy's saying this and really trying to like share with him what I was getting from this thing. And then like, he was like slowly, I want to say masterfully, like shifting the situation into like a, yeah, but what does that say about divinity thing? It may have been like a philosophical or religious text. I don't really remember. But then like at the end, he was just he like was just full on trying to convert me. I don't know how he did it. It was like so, it wasn't even subtle. I probably just really liked the book that I was reading and like didn't care what his agenda. Cause I was just like, you could probably also like this if I like it, you know, but he didn't, I guess. And it didn't work because for reasons, obviously, but also just like, it was really stunning. Like there's so many different kinds of bad breath in the world. And like, his is like a really like a reedy, like a memory of a plastic straw situation. It was just really bad.
Yeah.
And like, you know, when someone's doing that, their breath gets worse because you're hearing them talk all the time and it's more present. And it's also, you hate what he's saying. So his breath gets worse because you don't like him. I don't know how I made it through. I think I must've put on my headphones or something. It was just really bad at the end.
And they were sitting right next to you, right?
Couldn't get out if I tried. Oh
God. Like how long was the flight?
I feel like it must've been like, I must've been visiting my mom or something. So it must've been maybe like 2 or 3 hours.
Ah, nah, fam. I wouldn't be able to take that.
It took place at the end of the flight, if I recall. Okay. Right. So it could have been a lot like an awkward, like you're going to Europe situation where you're like, oh, don't touch me, I hate you. But it wasn't, thank God.
I don't know if both of y'all have experienced this, but you know, usually it happens at airports. You're walking through the airport and there's like a guy who hands you a piece of paper and you look at the paper, you think it's like a flyer, but like, there was this one time I landed in Florida with my family and I looked through this paper this guy handed me. It was a bunch of like cheesy jokes, but I just found them hilarious. And I was busting out laughing. And then I flip it over to the back and they're trying to convert me. They're trying to make me see the light of Jesus. I'm like, oh, I just threw it right in the garbage. I was just like, listen, you know, you know, it was funny, but it's like, please stop trying to do that to people. You know what I mean? Don't try to make people think the way you think. You know, I hate that.
It's like when corporations pretend to have personalities and comment on other people's Instagrams and stuff. Like some labels do that and stuff. And like, what? Like, you've got to be kidding me.
Has that happened to y'all?
No. That's why I'm mad. They haven't done it to me.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Target DM'd us yet.
Yeah. Warner Brothers slid into your DMs. Yeah.
Yeah. Warner Brothers, like, we love to collab. That's your day rate.
Great.
Wow. Unbelievable. The new album is Tell Me I'm Bad. Editrix, thank you so much for coming on My Little Underground.
Thank you.
And you let people know where they can follow you, where they can buy the album, stream the album.
We got editrix.bandcamp.com. And download the digital. If you want to buy the actual record, you can get it from the Exploding in Sound Bandcamp. We're on what, Spotify and all the other ones.
But consider not using them.
Yeah, listen to it on Bandcamp, frankly.
Yeah, you don't want to. Daniel Ek just doesn't seem trustworthy.
Yeah.
But we're there for some reason. Yeah, so if that's what you got, you know, work it.
Yeah.
And then we have an Instagram, Editrix Plays Rock and Roll is our handle. And I have a Twitter, which is Eisenberg Sounds, which I don't even know. I might end that. Twitter is just a... Woof, it's a ride.
Listen, no, Wendy, look, I gotta tell you a funny Twitter story, right? I think you tweeted once, you said chick, right? And then I retweeted it, and I was like, yo, like, they gotta reissue Someone's Ugly Daughter. You know about that album?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good. I was like, they gotta reissue it. I don't know if that's what you were talking about, but I just wanted to put it out there. I wanted to
let people
know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, bless you. I think I saw that. I was just tweeting because I was sad, because like one of the first records I got into was Light as a Feather, and he had just passed away. So I was just like, chick. But the fact that you were like, chick, make this happen was like, yes, that's productive. This is good.
Okay. I had no idea what you were talking about. I was like, chick. Okay.
Oh, that album I've been obsessed with. Like, I just found it. Oh man, it's so good, man. I hold that up like any album that came, like any like grungy alt rock album that came out in 95 or whatever, I hold that up against it. Like, I think they'll give what's that band, Veruca Salt, I think they give them a run for their money, you know, in my opinion. Oh man, it's so good. I can't stop listening to it. And the fact that Mariah Carey was involved in it makes it even better. She did the album art and everything like that. Ah, beautiful stuff.
I love stuff like that.
Yeah.
Who is it that played, there's this oh, whatever. I'm going to totally blank on this, so I'm not going to bring it up, but maybe privately. There's like a whole free jazz and like soul singer like thing that's been going on forever. And it's like my favorite. And I'll give you some examples, but right now I'm like really tired and I've been looking at my screen all day, so it won't make any sense.
Same thing. Same. So, And I'm about to look at another screen too, because I might like watch a show or something like that. Or, oh, actually, I have to edit a podcast that I'm putting out soon. So there, I have to look at more screens. So,
do you have like blue light glasses? Are you okay?
Right. Yeah.
Do you have like blue light glasses?
No. I think that's just a reflection of.
No, like to protect your eyes. I had to start wearing them when I was writing essays and stuff. Like, oh my God, I have to show you them. They're so funny.
Okay, yeah, please.
These look so bad, but also so good. I wear them like all the time on Zoom, and I'm just like, hey, from the future.
Oh man, that's so cool. That's so good. Cool. I turn off like the blue light filter on my phone and everything like that. I turn it on, so like I'm not just staring into the abyss. But you know what's interesting, I haven't seen an eye doctor in a minute. I have to go back, but but Editrix, thank you so much for being on My Little Underground. You know,
totally, it was great talking to you.
Yeah, I hope we shattered indie rock or something, you know,
at least we like, you know, hit it with an axe kind of lightly.